So in session 14 here now, we are going to address illustrations. Do you think you can illustrate? A lot of us kind of go, oh, well, that guy's a really good storyteller, and I'm just not so good at this, you know. A lot of us can feel really insecure about this kind of thing. I felt that way, certainly, because a lot of other people got so many people laughing. Did you notice in chapel today, when Johan gets up to speak, whatever he says is so funny, you know. The funniest person I've ever met was Dr. J.D. Douglas, who the editor of the New Bible Dictionary, who was on our faculty when I came here. And he was teaching, you know, 25, 28 years ago. Every sentence that guy said was so funny. I mean, literally, he could hardly say a sentence that was not funny. And you may feel like you're for yourself, oh, I'm really not like that. I'm not so funny. Well, I felt that way, and then I was up in Thailand, and I went to the elephant show up there, and these guys just really worked with these elephants. They brought these easels out and put the paint out there, and then these elephants started painting pictures. This picture of this flower, this plant, was actually done by an elephant. And it just helped me to see, if elephants can illustrate, you can too, you know? And I felt like, wow. Normally I don't get a lot of motivation from elephants, but on this particular one, there was an exception. We all know that illustrations are important. Good illustrations are important. It's not so important just to keep blabbing and blabbing and giving all kinds of stories. But actually to have effective illustrations, we see how important that is. Why do you think it is? Help me here. Why is it important to you when somebody's preaching that the person give illustrations? Oh, it's not important? Well, let's just go to the next session and we'll... No, okay. Very good. So we have a difficult concept. People kind of go, I think I hear the words you're saying, but it's not very clear to me. Then you give an illustration. You show a real life story of somebody doing what you're talking about. Ah, now I know exactly what you're talking about. What else?
It demonstrates that the preaching was applied to the preacher.
Yeah. Yeah. If the illustration is relating to the preacher, you're basically saying, this has shown up in my life. That is, if the illustration is about you.
It comes out more.
A couple of obvious ones you haven't said yet. Do you realize I'm giving you an illustration about illustrations right now?
Yeah.
I'm asking you a question. I'm giving you an illustration about elephants. So what did the elephant story that I just told do for you? It introduces a subject, yeah. Hopefully it woke you up a little bit. Sort of like coffee, you know. Yeah, Kevin?
It is a visual impression that lasts.
It, say again?
It's a visual impression that...
Okay, good. A visual impression, if you're painting a picture for the people in their mind, so to speak, that's going to be a lot more lasting. So that's a great point, Tom, because... You're thinking in terms of longevity of the idea. Our minds are bombarded with some have said the average person sees more than 500 advertisements a day. A day. When you add up what you see on your cell phone and what you see on the train or the bus and the television and et cetera, et cetera. So the ones that are lasting are the ones that are visual and the ones actually that impact you emotionally as well. Keeps it more interesting, doesn't it? I hope I drew your interest in by talking about elephants in Thailand. So you kind of go, oh yeah, okay, that's kind of interesting. Hopefully you said that. Well, the focus of our session is not so much the why we do it, because I think we all know how important it is, but how to do it. How can you give good illustrations? Page 64 will bring us into some things that I hope that maybe you haven't thought about that can help you. I'm calling this planning for oral clarity. How can you speak in a way that is clear? One of the ways you can speak clearly is by illustrating what you're saying. All right? And here's the first of those various tips here. It's draw illustrations from your listener's world, not yours. This principle I find very, very helpful when I'm trying to think of how am I going to illustrate my sermon. It's like this. I give you a little space here if you want to fill this in. This is the world of the preacher. This is you. Okay? Oh, except I've inverted it. I've inverted it to on your diagram here, but you'll get the idea though. What is your world like? What do you do?
Student.
You're a student. So what does that mean? What are you doing during the week that's different from the other people?
Study.
How many hours a week do you actually study?
A lot.
Probably at least 20, right? Maybe 30 hours a week. I mean, you're probably doing at least 3 hours a day, right? 4 hours a day. Do you think the average person that you're speaking to in a church is going to be spending 4 hours a day in study? No. Your world's very different from that person's world, right? Not unless they're a student. The world of the listener, that's the them, is very different from your world. How is your world different? How's their world different from your world? The average person there in a church that you're going to be preaching at.
Work.
That person spends 40 to 60 hours a week doing something you don't do. Rubbing shoulders with non-Christians. I'll be vulnerable with you here on this one. When I go down to Shenton Way, the banking district of Singapore, or when I go down to Orchard Road, the shopping district, in the corporate area there, and I see how women dress, I just go, whoa, is my world different? You ladies, y'all look nice, but none of you are dressed like those women down there in the corporate. You have a lot more modesty. That's one way, one world that I find just very different. I don't have that level of, temptation or whatever. It's not a big deal here on campus. There's a sense of modesty and that kind of thing. What else is part of the listener's world that maybe wouldn't be part of your world? Work is definitely probably one of the key ones. Yeah, maybe their family is different. If you come from a Christian family and you're talking to a young congregation of mostly new believers, they're pretty much from non-Christian families. Pretty much you could guarantee that. So your world is different. So the principle here is draw illustrations from your listener's world, not from your world. Your worlds are different. You do see that they intersect. Because there is an overlap, right? So here's the question. Well, where are your best illustrations? Where are you going to find the best illustrations? In terms of the diagram, where would you put? Where are you going to be maybe more of an expert and in the middle? So there's your number one place. When you're thinking about how am I going to apply this passage, and that would also be the idea, applying, illustrating, what do I have in common with my listeners? So how would that look? How would that look for you to apply in an area that's common? Still?
Go to church?
Yeah, you and I are at the same church. Let's talk about how this fits into our particular church. So I'll often do that. I'll say, this is an international church. We're a small church. But look at this. I was telling a couple that visited from, he's an American who grew up in France with a Norwegian father and American mother, and he has a French wife. He came to church on Sunday. I was trying to think, how does it, this is the first time they've been to church in 5 years, right? And they, for God just brought them to our church. And I thought, this is very, very significant. This family has not been to church for 5 years. I have got to connect with them. I've got to have them feel like their world and my world, they intersect. I understand. So I told them, I said, well, he's from Korea. you know, she's from, you know, whatever. And I listed all these countries of all these people around. I said, we have international marriages here too, because he's American, she's French. And I want them to see in my preaching, my teaching, I want to envision them out there. And I often do this when I'm preparing. What am I going to say? So-and-so is going to be there. So-and-so is going to be there. This message has got to connect to them. This illustration has got to connect them. So, for example, so if I say, well, you know, not all my family believe in Jesus. And sometimes I'll tell my congregation, you know, and my 24 closest relatives, only 7 of them believe in Jesus. All right? Why do I say that to my people? To connect. Because where are they coming from? They're probably thinking, oh, this is Pastor Rick. Yeah, his wife's a Christian. I know her. And everybody in his family is a Christian and all this. He doesn't have to deal with the kind of things I deal with. And I want my people to realize that is not true. I'm dealing with non-Christian relatives all the time. When I go back to when I do Facebook posts, when I visit my parents, my siblings, my children, etc., we're dealing with a lot of people really struggling in their walk with the Lord. So that's an area that's in common. I don't try to pretend, oh, I know what it's like to be in the corporate world, you know, as a banker dealing with China. That would be deceptive. I'm not in that world, so I don't try to pretend that I'm in that world. You know, I try to find a common area. Family. How about food? I mean, there's so many things we share in common with the people that we're talking to, even though we're full timers and they're not. Right? Can you think of others?
Preferences.
What kind of preferences? Just
hobbies.
Yeah, hobbies. You may have the same hobby they have. Good. So free time. Your free time, leisure time. You do. Do you guys have any leisure time?
Study.
No, you don't have any leisure time. I don't have much. I walk in the botanic gardens with my wife. They walk in the botanic gardens with their spouse too. We share that in common. We share the need to exercise in common. They need sleep. I need sleep. They need more sleep. I need more sleep. You know what I mean? They need to pray. I need to pray. I need God's word. My audience needs God's word. You see, I have so many things in common with them. So that's really the best. Now, where are you going to find your second best place to get illustrations? Mr. Google will help you. Mr. Google also wastes a lot of your time trying to find that. I mean, it's very helpful. I go to Google a lot for these sort of things. But here's your second best place. It's their world. Especially if you have experience in their world. So I'll often say things like, well, I have a business degree. In fact, I was talking to a guy at chapel today, one of our students. He's a businessman. And I want to connect with him. And so he runs a business. And so I said, yeah, I have a business degree. Do you struggle with the idea of profit being the highest goal of business? And he said, oh, yeah, I really do. People are always telling me that is the most important thing is to make a profit. I said, yeah, I remember a time when I was in business school. And the professor said, whatever you do, you got to make a profit. That is the highest goal. And one of the students raised a hand and says, professor, you know, is it really the highest goal? I mean, shouldn't be helping people be just a higher goal? And the professor said, well, if you just help people, you don't make a profit, you're going to go under. And so, anyway, what I was trying to do, I wasn't preaching, but I'm trying to connect with this person to find common ground. Even though I graduated from business school, 2 hours later I became a missionary. There's not a whole lot of time there to fall away. Enough time to have lunch and get in the car to drive off to mission training. So I didn't tell him that, because then he's going to say, oh, well, you can't relate at all, because I've been a businessman for 20 years, you know. But I want to find the point of contact, and I want to illustrate from his world. So I said, well, so tell me what it's like operating your company. And he said, I'm nearly getting tired of just everything being related to profit. And I think he felt like he could relate to me. So I would want to do that in the pulpit, too. I want to speak in such a way that people go, wow, I thought all these people who are associated with the Bible college, all they know about is what life was like 2,000 years ago. They may know something about today after all, you know. And then, of course, your third place is going to be your world. Your world is study, being around a lot of Christians, that kind of thing. But don't be talking about all your seminary stories. You know, people just cannot relate to that. I find that when people, right when they get out of seminary, they're often talking about all their time in seminary and all that. And I kind of cringe a little bit when I'm in the audience and there's a new graduate who's just talking about seminary, 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 seminary. Because other people out there are kind of going, well, I can't relate. I don't understand what it's like being in a class and every single person in the class is a Christian. You know? I mean, every single person in this class, if Jesus came today, we'd all go. Right? People can't relate to that. So talk about what they can relate to. And your last area then is going to be outside your circle and their circle. Where are you going to find all these illustrations? Clevy, where are you going to find number four? Google. SermonCentral.com. Things you read. Newspapers, etc. Now those, I wouldn't shy away from saying what the news story is today if it's going to illustrate a point. I often will talk about what the news is. I did it in my last class session this morning. The news this morning was such and such. But the idea is to illustrate a point and to be contemporary. It's out there. Is it out there? Yes, it's out there, but here's how a Christian worldview responds to that. But here's the main point. Draw illustrations from your listener's world, not your world. All right, any of your thoughts about that? Other thoughts? That's probably the most important one. So think about life from their perspective. Get your outline done early each week, and Matt Gilt will give you time to find good illustrations. I've been there when I'm like Saturday night trying to get my outline done. Doesn't happen very often, but sometimes people die during the week and, you know, or too many hospital visits or whatever, and you just don't get your stuff done as early as you wanted to. But if you get your outline done as early as possible, it helps you. So for me, my next sermon is on Romans. So I'm thinking, now I have some time to think about it now, because let's see, what stories right now are really going to help me to communicate the central idea of the book of Romans? Be righteous, that we need to be righteous before God. That's a difficult concept to communicate. I may change my title instead of be righteous to be something else, you know. But I'm trying to stay as close as I can to what the book of Romans is talking about, the righteousness of God and all that. Vary the type of illustration used, point C. You may like poetry, share poetry, but don't make all your sermons poetry. You may appreciate it, but your audience may not appreciate it. I'm not a big poet, and I know it. Hardly ever used is, on the left-hand column here, humor. Hardly anybody ever uses humor. In my experience in Singapore, I find that preachers don't try to get their audience to laugh. Maybe yours does. Does yours do it? Oh, good. I'm glad to see. I wrote this some years ago, and I think it is changing now. Nursery rhyme. Have you thought about nursery rhymes and the theology of nursery rhymes? Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. What a dismal story, you know? If I was a little kid, I kind of go, so life is hopeless? You mean if I fall off the wall, I'm going to be injured for life? And you're like, why do we tell that? You know, it would be, I think even hopefully as I'm telling you right now, you're kind of going, yeah, I really thought about that before. Anyway, I could cite some other ones, but maybe I'll spare that. I like this one where the guy goes, oh, I wish you were a little less specific with his illustrations. I had to do this last Sunday because I was telling a story, and some of the people out there, if I was clearer in my story, they would know exactly what I'm talking about, who I'm talking about, who doesn't appear in a positive light in the story. So I tried to word myself carefully so they wouldn't discern the person I'm talking about that would reflect negatively on that person. So I say, don't be offensively precise. Another point, don't tell stories, relive them. Don't read the story to the people unless the reading of it is so impactful that by reading it, you really capture what was happening. If it's your own life, for example, your own life story, you certainly don't need to read it. In fact, if I'm sitting there reading, and then what I did after that was I went over to the store, and then people out there are going to go, why are you reading a story about your own life? Just tell it. And of course, if you're practicing it out loud, all the better, because then it'll flow better when you actually do it. You can tell stories. Reg Grant and John Reed have some very good principles on how to tell stories in their book, Telling Stories to Touch the Heart. Here's one of the key principles of telling a story. Don't start a story off like this. Let me tell you a story about my friend who died of cancer. Okay? What's wrong with starting a story that way? It is deductive. I'm like, are you brought into the story? When I say, let me tell you about my friend who died of cancer. You go, game over. I already know the end of the story. The person died of cancer, you know. Better to say, let me tell you a story about Jim. Jim and I were good buddies, and Jim and I did this, and you know, and this happened. And hopefully you're drawn into the story, and at the end you find, ah, wow. It's sad that he ended up dying, but you're not giving all the goods away, so to speak, at the beginning of the story. That's a good principle for telling stories. If you have a difficult time being humorous, there are many different sources on the internet or other books talking about that. One of the things I found is that what's humorous to one person is not very humorous to someone else. And so you can read these books on humor and think, that's humorous? Is there something humorous there? I don't quite catch it, you know? That's because it's written in a certain context. And then illustrate, here's a high goal I try to set for myself, but I don't always reach it. Illustrate for every 3 minutes of preaching. So, like on my page 51 sermon, I want to be interesting when I preach this in chapel. I was preaching on Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and as I go through it, I realize, oh, actually, I'm trying to really draw the audience in here. Are they really worshiping God? And it needs a lot of illustrations to do that. This actually has 18 illustrations in a 15-minute message. So that's over one per minute. And the idea is, these are obviously short. And a lot of times, just having a bunch of short illustrations is not going to do it. Sometimes it's better to have an extended illustration that will really draw people in, if it's a good story. I did that a few weeks ago when I was preaching at Coxsackie Church. It's like a 10-minute illustration. So it was a fair, but hopefully it illustrated the whole idea. It went two pages. That's the longest I've ever done. But normally you're gonna share. You need to share enough illustrations to keep people's attention as you go along. All right. Yes.
Do you write a manuscript?
I write a manuscript for every Sunday. And on some points, the manuscript itself is not everything word for word. But then if I have my computer in front of me, so I'll put the illustration right here in the notes section of my PowerPoint. And if I need a clue, I can do that. But I don't use notes when I preach. But if there's more detail on something, then I'll put it right here. And it'll clue me in on it. But I do try to practice what I preach. Do try to preach what I practice. To do a full manuscript. And you can see hundreds of my manuscripts on my website. Because every sermon I preach is up on my website. Okay, here's some dangers. Avoid these dangers when illustrating your points. This is from a department newsletter we had here some years ago here at SBC. One of the dangers is the embellished story, where you share a whole bunch of irrelevant details and never get to the point. Don't do that. Be concise and don't tell a bunch of stuff you don't need to. The superfluous story. This is when the preacher has just heard a really good story. Can't wait to spring it on the congregation. It's like, I got to tell you this story. This is a fantastic story. It has nothing to do with my sermon, but it's a fantastic story. I heard it, and if I don't write this down and use it where it's appropriate, which I don't do, I'm going to just tell you right now. And people out there are like, I don't see how this relates, you know? So don't do that. How about the egocentric story? I had a pastor once who pretty much every week shared about how when he was the leader in his troop in Vietnam, how they succeeded. And you know, after about 4, 5, 6 weeks, the congregation was pretty tired of hearing about how all his success stories in Vietnam, because he was always the hero of every story. Share your failures, share your struggles with people. The specious story. There's nothing wrong with fictitious stories as long as they don't get presented as actual experiences. So the specious story is where you're saying, this happened to me. You're implying that it happened to you, but it really didn't happen to you. So when they find out it didn't really happen to you, it really wasn't about you. Wow, you've lost a lot of credibility.
So you're saying it's a fake story.
It's a fake story, yeah. You're pretending it actually happened to you. This is where you're losing integrity. And the manipulative story is where you're trying to play with the emotions of the people. Yeah, don't do that. So check the length, that's embellished. Check the relevance. Do you really need to say this illustration? Check your own humility. Do you always end up becoming the hero? Check the truthfulness of your story. Check the motive. All right. Now, maybe you still say, oh, I really, really need help in getting these, cataloging these. I'm getting good stories at least once a week, and I'm trying to collect them. But how do you actually manage them so you have them when you actually need them? You know, you could say to a guy who's holding you at knife point, unhand me or I'll use you in a sermon illustration, you know. Along this line, get approval before using certain individuals in illustrations. Even if that person is looking good. Let's say I've got a really great story that makes Peng look good. And I think it's, you know, I want to encourage my brother. I'm going to tell you all this story about him. He may not actually appreciate that. He may say, well, I didn't really appreciate being, you know, singled out there. There's a book, Fun with Chinese Characters, that I find very helpful. Preaching in this context, it's where I can share with you my knowledge of Chinese. You're all joking, and you're all laughing, you know. Like this word, un. Did I say it right? Un. Un means grace, like, or mercy, right? It's one of the few Chinese words I know. But here's how you get the word. Why is a mature man, here's the man, confined in a cell or an enclosure? That's the idea. Here's the man inside the box. The sight of such a confined man may excite pity in the heart. Well, here's your character for heart underneath the man in the box. Isn't that instructive? And this feeling may lead one to liberate him. That's grace. That's mercy. So un means have a heart for a person in the box who's confined, who's enslaved. That's what un means. Isn't that cool? Now, some of us here, like myself, are not Chinese speakers, but I can understand that concept. And that will illustrate to me, who do I know is in a box? Who do I know is feeling entrapped? Do I really care for that person? Even as I say that, several people come to mind. Does anybody come to mind for you? I think of one man who's not getting along well with his wife. I think of another friend who's got visa issues and not even sure whether he's going to stay in Singapore this month. I think of another person who's struggling with depression. I think of another person. You know, when I think of people in a box, I can think of many, many different people. So it's not hard for me to think in terms of a specific application. Oh, I can think of one teenage girl in my church who asked me to call her father to talk to her talk to him about her attending our church. Ah, yeah, that's one of my applications. You see what I mean? It's not so hard when you do that. So this book, Fun with Chinese Characters, is maybe you can get a hold of it. That goes with many, many different words, Chinese words, and a lot of them have biblical meaning to them. Now, where do you get these illustrations? Now, the seminarian says, well, my college roommate used to say, you know, and then in his first church, you go, oh, my seminary profs used to say, and then the second church, there was a dear old saint in my first church who used to say, and then, oh, third church, oh, I knew an elder in my former church who used to say, and finally, my granddaughter said the cutest thing the other day, you know, preaching in retirement. What's the point here? Life experience, but what else is the point? You get older, so you share different stories. The weakness of this is that as you get older, if you're only sharing the most recent things that are happening to you, then you're only communicating to the people in your own life stage. As you know, my son, my second son, his wife's going to have a baby in a few months. Ah, so I'm at a new stage of life. This year, God willing, I become a grandpa. So I have a first grandson. And so, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. About 2 or 3 months, I'll be a grandpa. So I have a connection to people who are becoming grandparents. And forgive me in advance, but probably when you see me in July, I'll be flipping out these pictures, showing these all the cute pictures without you asking. Because that's all the other people I've known become grandparents. They do that, you know. You got a cute picture right here?
Yeah, I know.
Because you're an aunt. Congratulations. You know, she's getting her early start on this sort of stuff, you know. So one of the things I find really helpful is keep a journal. I can go back to my journal entries from 30 years ago, and it's fresh. I can, hey, this is what I wrote back in 1982. You know, I read my journal from 1980, the night before I met my wife. I was reading that, and sometimes I'll share that in a sermon. Do you know what I wrote the night before I met my wife? I knew I was going to meet her the next day. I wrote in my journal, tomorrow I'm going to meet Susan for the first time. I knew that I was going to be on a music team with her based in the Philippines for 2.5 years. So I knew whether I liked her or not, I was going to get to know her well. I wrote in my journal, there is something here where I think that this girl I'm going to meet tomorrow is going to be my wife. I really did write that in my journal. I said, this is crazy. I've heard of love at first sight, but I've never heard of love at no sight, you know? You know? And sure enough, I met her the next day, and here we are 30-something years later. You know, we've been married for 35 years now. That can be very, very fresh to me because I can go back and see that I've written it down. And I encourage you to write things down. I encourage you to catalog your sermon illustrations. I love this picture. The girl's walking out. The house is on fire. She doesn't seem to notice, though. She almost gets run over by a car. She sees a bank robber running with a policeman running after. She gets to the library. The guy almost, he does actually fall off the roof of the library. And she comes to the librarian. Do you have any good resources for illustrations? What's the point? What's the point? Look around. There they are. They're all around you. Illustrations are... Yeah, you're a mind reader, Nellie. The illustrations are all around you. You have things that you encountered today that are maybe good illustrations for the next time you preach or teach. Now, you want to be careful. You don't want to have people leaving church with scowling faces, so you have to say, all persons in my sermon were fictitious, all persons in my sermon were fictitious, all sermons in my persons in my sermon were fictitious. You know, choose your examples carefully so you're not, you know, alienating people. And for you guys here, and actually for you ladies as well, you don't want your wife knocking you over the head saying, repeat after me, I will not make fun of my wife's cooking in my sermon anymore, you know? If I'm going to mention my wife in a sermon, well, which I did last Sunday, don't tell her that. But
wasn't she there?
No. She wasn't there because she was teaching the children and the other and teaching the Sunday school. But what I used her in an illustration, I said, Susan is so dedicated. And, you know, the passage here is talking about how do you encourage your leaders. Here's how you could encourage Susan. Maybe one of you could go and teach the Sunday school class. Because that way she can come in the service and she can hear the sermon. On that one, I didn't actually get her permission to say that. But normally I will, but if I asked her, she wouldn't give me permission on that one. She'd probably say, honey, don't complain to the church. And I'm saying, sweetie, I love you. I want you to have a break. And when she's teaching the kids every single week, sometimes it's the pastor's wife who never gets to hear the sermons, you know? So anyway, I'm trying to guard my marriage. Anyway, okay. A lot of books, but remember, these are all place number four, priority number four. Share the overlap of your life and their life first, then their life, then your life. But all these other ones, these illustration books, they'll give you different things. Most people aren't using books for illustrations anymore. More of us are using websites. SermonCentral.com, especially for preachers, has the most illustrations. And these are helpful. You can You can get some good illustrations from these places. But they're not going to be as effective as sharing from your own life where your own life overlaps them. And then how about video clips? Do the speakers you hear share video clips? Sometimes? You know, I'll do this every few sermons. Wingclips.com, you can buy these clips, I don't know, $10, $5 or $10, something like that, for a clip that'll go 2 or 3 minutes. I will put those into my sermon or at the beginning of my sermon, that kind of thing that could be helpful to illustrate a particular point, especially from a movie that is familiar to the people. Sometimes I'll do it for a movie that's coming out. And then you want to categorize your illustrations. All right, however you do it, you need a title and you need a subtitle. Don't just say love and then categorize all your sermons on love, because you're going to have to read every one of them. What do you actually want to say about love, you know? You can actually do this on page 66. How would you title these illustrations? Let's pick one that's really short. How we learn, lower bottom left of page 66. How we learn. 1% of what we learn is through taste. 1.5% through touch. 3.5% through smell. 11% through hearing. 83% of what we learn through sight. This shows the importance of audiovisual materials in teaching. Okay? So you have some good statistics there done from research. Now, how would you categorize that? Would you give it that title, How We Learn, and put it on a card or put it on a Microsoft Word file, and you'd put it under H, How We Learn? It's not really an effective title, is it? It'll be How We Learn, How We Walk, How We Hurt People, How We... You know, it's not a very good title. So what subtitle would you give it? You'd have to give it some type of title where you would see it in the future. And you'd have to try to remember it. How about this one? Senses. The importance of AV. The importance of audio as well as the visual. Senses is probably not as good as learning. So the idea here, what I do is I put the title in all caps, learning, and then the subtitle in small letters, teach visually. So when I've got it in my file, I don't have to read the whole illustrations. I can just flip through all the ones that say learning. There are other ones, but we don't have the time. I'd encourage you to go through. There's 4 illustrations there, and so I'm giving 2 different ways you could title or subtitle them. So you got to give a title and you got to give a subtitle to it, and then you have to figure out some way to file them. For years, I used 3x5 cards. Nobody seems to use 3x5 cards anymore. I don't use them anymore. Or A4 size, you know, full sheets, and then you have a file cabinet full of all these full sheets. I find it just doesn't work. So I use my computer. Then I can cut and paste from internet, just cite the source, that kind of thing. And so now what I do, when I collect my sermon illustrations, I have a Word document for each illustration. So it probably uses a page or shorter for each Word document. And then that file has a name. So here's a little screenshot of my computer. So let's say I have 3 illustrations on anger. These are 3 separate Word files. Anger, the effects of anger last a long time. Anger at God, or anger leads to destruction. You see, there's 3 of them on anger. And I can look at those and go, which one of those is the point that the text is actually making here? And I just keep, as I have more and more illustrations, I keep dumping them into this folder on my computer, and I have several hundred of them right now. I'd be happy to email it to you if you want. Then it'll give you a few hundred illustrations to start with. Then you can kind of add your own as you go through. This is how I personally do it. So when I want Christmas illustrations, I've got, I don't know, 5 or 10 of them right now that I think are actually really good illustrations related to Christmas. That's a hard time to find illustrations. And then I don't have to go search the internet because I've already found them in the past, but I haven't used them. And when you do in our Word file like this, you can type on it, oh, you know, I used this one, Christmas 2018 or 2000 whatever. And it's editable. And then you can cross-reference to the actual sermon that you've preached. That's what I would suggest for you in our digital age. Try to keep these things digital as possible. I have on my computer right in front of me every sermon I've ever preached, every illustration that I've ever given. And, you know, it can all be indexed, especially on a Mac that has a very good search feature. So I can say, oh, what was that? What was that illustration about Rotterdam? It was Rotterdam, and so I can just type in Rotterdam, and it searches the 1.2 million files on my computer and look for Rotterdam.
Will it search the content?
It'll search the content. It's much more efficient on a Mac than it does on a PC, but you can do it on PCs as well. And so I suggest that you put them digitally, and then you can find these things a lot easier. I hope that you will seek to be masters at illustrations, because your people will understand what you're saying, and the people will, when they grasp it and they see how it shows up in their life, they will rise up and call you blessed, because they're interested in what you have to say. And an illustration is in essence a bit of an application. We'll talk about that more when we talk about applications later. Because when you show where this shows up in someone's life, you're helping them see where it shows up in their life. So I hope you'll try to become masters of illustration.